first one I'm going to read is the U.S. has approved 3 COVID-19 vaccines. Here's what they all have in common, from CNN's Maggie Fox. Johnson & Johnson's single-dose coronavirus vaccine has become the 3rd COVID-19 shot approved for use in the U.S. Previously, Pfizer and Moderna's 2-dose vaccines had been approved. None of the 3 vaccines contain additives that can sometimes cause strong reactions, such as antibiotics, preservatives, or adjuvants, which are compounds used to boost the immune response that can add to the kick of any vaccine. That means a very low risk of allergic reaction, especially life-threatening anaphylaxis. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention reports only a few cases of anaphylaxis in people who have been given the Moderna or Pfizer vaccines, and all were easily treated. Only one case of anaphylaxis has been reported in the 44,000 people who have tested the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. Plus, all 3 target a specific part of the spike protein called the receptor binding domain. As the name implies, it's the part of the virus that uses to grapple cells. Mutations to this particular region could weaken the efficacy of all 3 vaccines. Luckily, all 3 appear to stimulate an overwhelming immune response, one much stronger than people get after a natural infection. So far, it appears to be enough to continue to at least partially protecting people from the most concerning variants. And that wraps up your coronavirus update for this Monday, March 1st, 2021. As always, thank you for being with us. We'll be back tomorrow afternoon. In the meantime, stay well and have a great day.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 41 and clear. Tonight, clear with a low in the mid-40s. Then, tomorrow, clear with a high in the low 70s. Tomorrow night, clear with a low in the mid-50s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 10 a.m.
This program is made available to the IAAIS Program Share and was recorded at the Audio Reading Service of the Ellen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana, for people with print impairments.
Welcome. This is Independent Living, and I'm your reader, Melissa Dunning, with the Audio Reading Service at the Ellen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Today, I'll begin by reading from Consumer Reports on Health. And now I'll begin with HealthWire, quick tips for living well. Can this curb loneliness? A study found that older adults in group exercise or health classes felt less isolated, even when instruction went virtual during the early days of the COVID-19 pandemic. It tracked 382 people from July 2018 through March 2020 who took classes in Tai Chi, managing chronic health conditions, and other subjects. They reported a 6.9% reduction in loneliness at 6 months. Heart attacks in women. Women were 20% more likely than men to develop heart failure or die within 5 years of a heart attack, a study of 45,064 people found. The women were older and had more health problems than the men, but were also less likely to be seen by a heart specialist in a hospital or receive heart protective drugs. After a heart attack, it's key to control blood pressure, cholesterol, and diabetes. Know the 5 signs of a stroke. Almost 1/3 of older adults don't know the major stroke signs and that calling 911 is crucial, a report found. The 5 signs are sudden numbness or weakness of the face, arm, or leg, especially on one side, confusion or trouble speaking, difficulty seeing, trouble walking, dizziness or balance loss, and severe headache. Do multivitamins help you? People who take multivitamin supplements were 30% more likely than those who didn't to rate their health as excellent, very good, or good, according to a study of 21,603 U.S. adults. But it also found that their rates of health problems, difficulty with daily activities, and psychological distress were no better than those of the other participants. The study, from a 2012 National Health Survey, involved 4,933 people who took multivitamins and 16,670 who didn't. The researchers noted that those who took multivitamins may erroneously think that the supplements improve their health, or they may simply have a higher opinion of their own health status. This food discourages ED. Men ages 60 and older who ate the most produce, nuts, whole grains, beans, and fish, and limited red and processed meat and trans fats, were less likely to report erectile dysfunction than those who frequently ate red and processed meats and skimped on the other foods, according to a recent multi-year study. Learning to cut diabetes risk. A two-year study found that people with higher than normal blood sugar, who dropped about 4 pounds, trimmed their belly fat an inch, and exercised more, cut their risk of type 2 diabetes. They took up to 21 healthy lifestyle classes on topics like weight loss and exercise, while a control group took one class and got written healthy lifestyle info. After the study, 22% of the control group had developed diabetes, about 14% in the other group did. Prepare for a doctor's office visit. Do your homework. Before your appointment, call to ask about safety steps, says Yale School of Medicine's Mary Tinetti, MD. Universal mask use, sanitizing exam rooms between patients, and social distancing practices at check-in and in waiting areas are a must. Don't touch. Stay at least 6 feet from others in the office and avoid contact with surfaces such as doorknobs, elevator buttons, and touchpads. If you must touch something, do so with a tissue and wash your hands or use a hand sanitizer afterward. Skip small talk. It's not the time to be chatty. Come prepared to describe your concerns clearly. If you have multiple concerns or questions you'd like to ask, make a list. This will ensure that the appointment is efficient and thorough. Next story, medical matters. How much alcohol is okay? The science is shifting. Here's what you need to know. No doctor would advise drinking alcohol strictly for its health benefits. But moderate consumption, defined as no more than one drink per day for women and two for men, has been considered low risk, possibly even good for you. Yet recently, the Expert Advisory Committee for the 2020 U.S. Dietary Guidelines took a more cautionary position, recommending that the daily limit be lowered to one drink for men. Quote, "We realized that the risks of alcohol have probably been underestimated," says a committee member, Timothy Namey, MD, director of the Canadian Institute for Substance Use Research. "If you drink alcohol, less is better for your health than drinking more." That message is key now that alcohol consumption has risen during the pandemic. In a recent CR nationally representative survey of more than 2,500 adults in the U.S., 23% said they drank more after COVID-19 hit than before. But even prior to that, heavy drinking was on the rise among older adults. A 2019 study estimated that 11% of people 65 years and older were binge drinkers, at least 4 drinks at one sitting for women, 5 for men. Loneliness, isolation, and health concerns can increase stress, leading some to drink more now, says Shelley F. Greenfield, MD, a professor of psychiatry at the Harvard Medical School. Although the final dietary guidelines don't include the committee's recommendation, experts are still divided on the role of alcohol in a healthy diet. Here's what we know about alcohol and health and how to cut back if you'd like to. Potential benefits, real risks. The question of whether drinking alcohol is beneficial is a controversial and complicated one, according to Namey. Several studies have linked having a drink or two per day. One is equivalent to 12 ounces of beer, 5 ounces of wine, or 1.5 ounces of liquor, to certain health benefits. For instance, a 2020 study in JAMA Network, OPEN, found that adults, middle age and older, who consumed low to moderate amounts of alcohol had better cognitive function than those who never drank. Another study, which involved 333,247 people and was published in the Journal of the American College of Cardiology, found that when compared with lifetime abstainers, light to moderate drinkers were 26 to 29% less likely to die from heart disease, respectively. But while some have attributed that lower risk to factors like a boost in HDL, good cholesterol, associated with moderate drinking, those drinkers may simply have been healthier to begin with. What's clear is that the potential benefits of alcohol are outweighed by the harm of drinking too much. For instance, binge and heavy drinking can increase the risk for high blood pressure, stroke, and congestive heart failure. Alcohol is also a proven cause of at least seven types of cancer, such as breast and liver cancer, says Marjorie McCullough, SCD, Senior Scientific Director for Epidemiology Research at the American Cancer Society. For some cancers, any consumption is harmful. Quote, the risk goes up with each drink, she says. For older adults, quote, the risks and unpleasant effects of alcohol get more pronounced, Namie says. Even modest drinking may increase feelings of fogginess or sleepiness, or increase the risk of falling. Plus, it can interfere with drugs for many conditions, such as sleep problems, anxiety, and high blood pressure. How to drink less. If you're concerned about your alcohol intake, these tips can help. Plan ahead. Consider how often and how much you want to drink. Keep a record. Use some kind of system, a note card in your wallet or an app, so you know how much you're drinking. Replace drinking with an activity. This can be especially helpful if you typically drink to de-stress or cope, Namie says. Avoid triggers. If you can determine the people, places, or times of day that prompt you to pour a drink, even if you're trying not to have one, you can plan to avoid those situations or develop alternative responses to those moments. And finally, talk with your doctor. If friends or family members express concerns about your drinking, or if you're worried about it, ask your doctor to help identify the safest and healthiest ways for you to cut back. And now I'll read from Tufts University Health and Nutrition Letter, published March 2021. What to do about breakfast? The morning meal is an important opportunity to nourish your body. When it comes to breaking the overnight fast, whether to eat breakfast and what to eat if you do can be a confusing topic. The fact is, if you do it right, the morning meal can offer an important opportunity to nourish your body, and it may help with weight control. What to eat. Typical American breakfast foods like processed meats, bacon, sausage, and ham, refined flour pastries, pancakes, and French toast, high-sugar cereals, and fried potatoes are generally not ideal. Quote, breakfast is a great opportunity to bring in foods which we may be falling short on, such as dairy products, milk, yogurt, cottage cheese, or fortified milk substitutes, whole grains, and fruits and vegetables, says Alice H. Lichtenstein, DSC, Director of the Cardiovascular Nutrition Laboratory at the Human Nutrition Research Center on Aging and Executive Editor of Tufts Health and Nutrition Letter. A bowl of whole grain hot or cold cereal, plain yogurt with granola, or cottage cheese topped with fresh or frozen fruit and nuts is a quick, simple, nutritious, and satisfying way to break your fast. A slice of whole grain toast or a whole wheat wrap makes a great base for peanut or other nut butter and banana or apple, melted cheese and tomato, mashed beans and salsa, or mashed avocado and hard-boiled egg. Eggs are a fine breakfast choice in moderation. Quote, an egg a day or a couple eggs every other day seem to be fine for most people in terms of heart health, says Lichtenstein. If your doctor recommends limiting egg intake, use egg whites or egg substitute. Consider looking beyond the limited definition of what constitutes breakfast food. You never know what you will hit on that strikes your fancy, says Lichtenstein. Explore the breakfast foods of different cultures. Try to include a protein source at breakfast, As research shows, spreading protein intake out throughout the day is ideal. Nutritional bonus. What we eat and don't eat is more important than whether we eat or don't eat breakfast. Over a day, regular breakfast consumers tend to have more nutrient-dense diets and healthier overall dietary patterns. A recent study found skipping breakfast or lunch caused people to fall short on intake of fruits, whole grains, and dairy. Intake of sodium and refined grains went up on days when meals were skipped. Data from an international review found that, while people who didn't eat breakfast were more likely to eat fewer calories in the day, breakfast eaters consumed more fiber, more of several essential vitamins and minerals, and less added sugars. Health benefits. Breakfast eating and skipping have been studied with regard to weight management, diabetes risk, and association with other chronic diseases, including cardiovascular disease. Research overall comes out in favor of breakfast, although there are some caveats. A recent analysis of randomized, controlled, short-term studies found skipping breakfast may have a modest benefit in terms of weight loss. But other studies, particularly longer-term observational studies, indicate people who regularly eat breakfast tend to weigh less. The analysis of randomized controlled trials also found skipping breakfast resulted in an increase in LDL, or bad cholesterol levels, compared to eating breakfast. Multiple observational studies find an association between skipping breakfast and higher risk of type 2 diabetes. These studies suggest that a regular, healthy breakfast is associated with improved blood sugar control. Other studies report an association between breakfast consumption and lower risk of cardiovascular disease. The impact of meal skipping is very difficult to study. Quote, "There are so many factors at play," says Lichtenstein. Can one really parse out the health impacts of eating breakfast if one participant eats a heaping plate of syrup-drenched refined grain pancakes and a side of bacon every day, and another eats fruit with yogurt or steel-cut oats? Are breakfast eaters healthier because they have other healthy eating habits, engage in more physical activity, or live less stressful lives? Are people who skip breakfast more likely to work the night shift, snack heavily throughout the evening, or eat because they are depressed, all of which could impact their health? Whatever your health goals, starting your day, whenever your day starts, with smart food choices is a good way to support your efforts. Here are some ideas for quick and simple, healthy breakfasts. Fuel your day with these tasty and nutritious meals that are ready in a snap. Bowled over. Assemble a bowl of plain Greek yogurt or low-fat cottage cheese and add toppings like fruit, nuts, and low-sugar whole oat granola or muesli. Sprinkle with cinnamon or add a dash of vanilla for extra flavor. Toast toppers. Add quick, nutritious toppers to a slice of whole grain bread or English muffin, like peanut or other nut butter, and sliced fruit or raisins, hummus with feta and olives, avocado and salsa, or hard-boiled egg and tomato. Fill them up. Whole grain pita and tortillas are easy to stuff or roll with hard-boiled or scrambled egg, cooked chicken or shrimp, or canned tuna. Top with veggies like spinach, tomato, and mushrooms. Add a tasty sauce or spread like salsa, mustard, or a dollop of plain yogurt to taste. Overnight options. Most whole grains, including oats and quinoa, and some seeds like chia seeds, can be soaked in liquid, milk, fortified milk substitute, water, or broth, while you sleep. In the morning, top with fresh or frozen fruit, nuts, cinnamon, or go savory and top with chopped fresh, thawed, or canned vegetables and protein like tofu, shredded cheese, or lean sliced meats. Try different proportions and combinations until you find your favorites. Next story. Special report, the facts about natural sugar substitutes. Low and no calorie sweeteners derived from plants are growing in popularity. Are they good choices? Nutrition research is rarely unequivocal, but experts are in agreement on at least one fact. Added sugars are bad for our health. Sugar substitutes are used by food manufacturers to try to satisfy our desire for sweets without cavities, calories, and blood sugar impact. The most recent entry into the sugar-free scene are low-calorie and calorie-free compounds derived from plants, including stevia, monk fruit extract, and yacon syrup. A closer look at these and other natural sugar substitutes may help you determine whether or not they are a good choice for you. Why sugar substitutes? Added sugars are associated with obesity, type 2 diabetes, and cardiovascular disease. They add calories to food without adding nutritional value, and they cause blood sugar or glucose levels to rise. Low-calorie and non-caloric sugar substitutes are employed to reduce calorie content of sweet foods in the unproven hope this will help with weight management. They are also commonly used, particularly by people with diabetes, to help control blood sugar levels. Sugar substitutes, which are often much more intensely sweet than sugar, are compounds that cannot be broken down by our digestive system or by the bacteria that live in our guts. They therefore do not provide us with any calories, and since they cannot be converted to glucose, they do not boost blood sugar levels. Some sugar substitutes are man-made artificial sweeteners, but many are compounds found in nature that are extracted, isolated, and added to foods or beverages in small quantities to increase the perception of sweetness. Although the extraction process sometimes makes these, quote, natural sugar substitutes somewhat distant from their source in nature, these products are appealing to many consumers looking for nature-based products that will sweeten their foods without the associated calories or spike in blood sugar. What to do? If you're going to drink or eat something with a lot of added sugars, it's pretty likely that low or no calorie natural sweeteners are better alternatives, says Dariush Mansafarian, MD, DRPH, Dean of the Friedman School, and Editor-in-Chief of Tufts Health and Nutrition Letter. But remember that such drinks and foods can be unhealthy in other ways, so don't allow lower calories to give a food a false aura of health. The best choice is to wean ourselves off the need for intense sweet tastes in general. On the way there, the no or low sugar plant-based sweeteners might bring a little sweetness to your life with less worry of negative health effects. Here are some examples. Stevia. Stevia glycosides are extracted from the leaves of the stevia plant, which have been recognized for their sweet taste in South America for centuries. Although concerns about potential toxicity have been raised, highly purified extracts have been judged to be safe by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. Monk fruit. The monk fruit plant is native to southern China and northern Thailand. The plant contains compounds called muscosides, which can be extracted from the fruit and purified. These compounds are 100 to 250 times sweeter per gram than sucrose. Allulose. This form of sugar occurs naturally in small amounts in some fruits and grains. Most commercially produced allulose is derived from corn. Yacon syrup. Newer to the U.S. sweetener scene, but growing in availability, yacon syrup is extracted from the roots or tubers of the yacon plant native to South America. This sweet, dark syrup is similar in consistency to molasses. And finally, sugar alcohols. Sugar alcohols like xylitol, maltitol, erythritol, and sorbitol occur naturally in a wide variety of fruits and vegetables, but those that are used as low-calorie sweeteners are made from other carbohydrates rather than extracted. Although these compounds are classified as alcohols, they will not get you drunk. Sugar alcohols are not entirely calorie-free. They provide fewer calories than sucrose, table sugar, but most must be used in higher amounts to achieve the same levels of sweetness, so they don't cut calories as much as other types of sugar substitutes. And now I'll read from the Mayo Clinic Health Letter, published March 2021. Aging in place. Here are some tips to make your home a healthy haven. Entryway. Number one, ramps, not stairs. To prevent falls, you should be able to get from the driveway to the front door without stairs and on smooth surfaces that are free of cracks. Any slopes should have handrails to grasp. 2. Keyless entry. A digital lock reduces the need to remember or fumble with keys. 3. Wide doorways. To allow clear passage, including for those in wheelchairs, entry points should be at least 32 inches wide. 4. Ample light. Overhead motion-activated lights improve safety and security at night. And 5. Solid footing. Area rugs or doormats should be heavy enough to not shift easily and be attached to the floor or porch with strong adhesives. Avoid throw rugs. In the kitchen, number 1. Appliances. Having automatic shutoff reduces fire risk. Also, appliance displays should be easy to read with push buttons or voice-operated controls. 2. Easy-to-use handles and levers. Aim for handles, not knobs, on cupboard doors, and a lever-style faucet for temperature control rather than separate knobs to turn. 3. Sink with clearance underneath. This style is easier to use with people in a wheelchair. 4. Wall ovens. They're easier to access and don't require working in close proximity to the stovetop, a burn risk. In the bathroom, 1. Grab bars. Install in the bath area and near the toilet for extra support. 2. Shower chair. This helps prevent falling in the shower. 3. Step-free bath access. This is easier to access with limited mobility and reduces fall risk. 4. Accessible toilet. One that's 17 to 19 inches high, compared with the standard 15 inches, reduces the need to bend down as far. Consider a bidet, which can be installed with the toilet seat. This makes it easier to clean after voiding. 5. Handheld showerhead. This is easier to adjust for people of all sizes and abilities. 6. Solid footing. Try to avoid loose rugs or secure them to the floor with strong adhesive. Use non-skid strips on the shower floor to prevent slipping. And 7. Nightlight. This or other lighting helps avoid problems when you get up at night to go to the bathroom. In the bedroom, main bedroom should be on the first floor. 2. No loose cords. 3. Accessible light controls. Light switches should be by the door and be next to the bed. And finally, 4. Secured tall furniture. Dressers and bookshelves taller than waist high shouldn't be near the bed and should be fastened to the wall to prevent tipping. Well, that's all the time we have for today. This has been Melissa Dunning with Independent Living. I hope you've enjoyed today's reading from the audio reading service at the Allen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
This is a recording library of West Texas Community Update.
Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center's Psychiatry Department will host free virtual monthly webinars covering multiple mental and behavioral health concerns. Each month, the public can join in through Zoom and listen to TTUHSC physicians and residents speak on topics ranging from depression, autism in children, PTSD, eating disorders, and much more. The public can find more information on TTUHSC Permian Basin's Facebook page or by emailing pbpsychadmin@ttuhsc.edu.
Saturday and Sunday mornings, enjoy a variety of religious publications and features. Saturdays at 7 a.m., it's Guidepost Magazine, followed at 8 a.m. with the week's Sunday school lessons. Those are repeated Sundays beginning at 4 a.m. Then Sunday mornings at 6, it's Catholic Today. And at 7, Christianity Today. On Recording Library of West Texas Radio, read by listening.
Now here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 45 and clear. Tonight, clear with a low in the mid-40s. Then tomorrow, clear with a high in the low 70s. Tomorrow night, clear with a low in the mid-50s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas.
This program is made available to the IAAIS program share and was recorded at the audio reading service of the Ellen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana, for people with print impairments.
Welcome, this is Able Living, and I'm your reader Kevin with the audio reading service at the Allen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Today I'll be reading from Disability Scoop, and now I'll begin with Airport Adding First of Its Kind Inclusive Play Area. This article written by Chris Ochsner and Shelley Lang of the Kansas City Star. Dateline Kansas City, Missouri. Commercial air travel is taxing enough. For families with children and adults with special needs, waiting at the airport terminal presents a multitude of challenges. That is why the Kansas City Aviation Department has teamed up with Variety KC to build what they claim to be the first of its kind inclusive play area in an airport terminal. The play area will be part of the new terminal currently under construction in Kansas City International Airport. The project was announced late last month during a news conference at one of the existing KCI terminals. Kansas City Councilwoman Heather Hall made the announcement saying that the new terminal will be the most inclusive of any airport terminal in the world. City officials say the Variety KC Family Play Zone will have features that will allow children with special needs to play alongside other children. Many of the features will give access to play equipment to children with mobility challenges. Some of the other features will include devices to include children with communication challenges. Beyond the play area, the new terminal will have the changing tables in the restroom that will be capable of accommodating adults with special needs. The new terminal is slated to open in March of 2023. Our next article, written by Sean Heasley, and it's entitled NBC Universal Commits to Audition Actors with Disabilities. A second major entertainment company is pledging to consider actors with disabilities for every one of its film and television projects. NBC Universal says it has signed a pledge from the Ruderman Family Foundation that calls on Hollywood studios, networks, and production companies to audition actors with disabilities for each new production they bring to series. NBC Universal remains committed to creating content that authentically reflects the world we live in, and increasing opportunities for those with disabilities is an integral part of that, said Janine Jones-Clark, an executive vice president of the company who works on inclusion across television, film, and streaming. We are proud to join the Ruderman Family Foundation pledge, as calls to action like theirs are important and hold the industry accountable of the work we still need to do in order to see systemic change. The move by NBC Universal comes after CBS signed to the Ruderman pledge in 2019. Neither company is required to hire actors with disabilities in the agreement, but advocates say that making a concerted effort to audition such talent is a step in the right direction. The Ruderman Family Foundation is thrilled to see NBC Universal commit to our guidelines and dedicate themselves further to casting people with disabilities in their productions, said Jay Ruderman, president of the Ruderman Family Foundation. By having such an influential entity like NBC Universal take this bold stand, we hope to continue to see others join us in striving to create more opportunities for people with disabilities in entertainment. A report out earlier this year found that 3.5% of regularly appearing characters on scripted broadcast television series this season have disabilities, a record high. But that figure falls far short of reflecting the number of people with disabilities in the American population. The Ruderman Family Foundation noted that just 22% of characters with disabilities on television are played by actors with disabilities themselves. Aside from CBS and NBC Universal, a host of Hollywood A-listers, including George Clooney, Joaquin Phoenix, Ed Norton, Bryan Cranston, Mark Ruffalo, Glenn Close, Eva Longoria, and Peter Farrelly, have signed the Ruderman Family Foundation's pledge pushing for more opportunities for people with disabilities in the entertainment industry. Our next article, also written by Sean Heasley, and it's entitled Facebook Cracking Down on Posts Linking Autism Vaccines. Making false claims about autism and vaccines could now get you kicked off Facebook. As a part of a broad effort to weed out vaccine misinformation, the social network said this week it will remove any postings with debunked claims about the coronavirus and vaccines, including those suggesting the vaccines are toxic, dangerous, or cause autism. The policy will continue for the duration of the pandemic and apply to both Facebook and Instagram, the company indicated. We will begin enforcing this policy immediately with a particular focus on pages, groups, and accounts that violate these rules, and will continue to expand our enforcement over the coming weeks, Facebook said in a posting about the policy change. Groups, pages, and accounts on Facebook and Instagram that repeatedly share these debunked claims may be removed altogether. Such vaccine-related claims are already barred from advertisements on Facebook. The move comes amid the massive rollout of COVID-19 vaccines, which have the potential to stop out the nearly year-long pandemic that faced skepticism among some. Facebook said it consulted with the World Health Organization and other top health experts. In addition to postings about autism and vaccines, the social network will also remove postings claiming that vaccines are ineffective, that COVID-19 is man-made or manufactured, and those suggesting that it's safer to get the disease than the vaccine. The goal of this policy is to combat misinformation about vaccinations and diseases, which, if believed, could result in reduced vaccinations and harm public health and safety, the policy states. The policy change is just the latest evolution of Facebook's approach to addressing vaccine misinformation. In 2019, the company said it would reduce the ranking of groups or pages that spread false or misleading information about vaccines and pull offending pages from search recommendations and predictions. It also moved to reject advertisements with vaccine misinformation and take away targeting options like vaccine controversies. In addition to removing problematic content, Facebook said this week that it is improving its search to point people to relevant, authoritative results and provide third-party resources to connect people to expert information about vaccines, and Instagram accounts that discourage people from getting vaccinated will become harder to find. The next story, entitled COVID-19 Year is Especially Hard on Students with Special Needs. This from the News and Observer. Dateline Raleigh, North Carolina. The past year has robbed many Americans of their lives, but it's also robbed many children with special needs, like Jaden Rogers, of the education they should have received. Jaden, age 6, who has speech and cognitive difficulties, has received most of his classes virtually since last March because the school is being closed for in-person classes during the coronavirus pandemic. It's been a frustrating year for his mother, Laurel Farrar, as she's watched Jaden regress while learning at their home in Chatham County, near Chapel Hill. I can't think of a single thing he's learned this year, Farrar said in an interview with the News and Observer. It's like he's lost rather than gained. Farrar's experiences in the Chatham County school system aren't unique. Families of special education students across North Carolina and the U.S. have been vocal about how pandemic-related school closures are setting their children back. Under federal law, students with disabilities are entitled to a free and appropriate public education. These students have an individualized education program, known as an IEP, that lays out accommodations that schools will make to help them learn. But the pandemic has caused school districts to scale back or eliminate some special education services or switch to offering them virtually. We're struggling with school districts that are unilaterally decreasing the amount of specially designed instruction in a student's IEP, Stacy Gahagan, a Durham attorney representing Farrar, said in an interview. Some are doing across-the-board reductions. Melvin Diggs, executive director of Exceptional Children and Advanced and Intellectually Gifted Children in Chatham County Schools, said he can't discuss specific cases due to the federal privacy laws, but he said schools have been trying to make the best of a difficult situation. I know we're not perfect, Diggs said in an interview. I understand parents are having challenges and we're having challenges, but we're trying to problem solve it, and at the end of the day, I want to be known as an organization that's responsive to parents. Education in North Carolina took a major shift last March when Governor Roy Cooper ordered all public schools closed for in-person instruction. It was a major change for the state's 183,000 students with disabilities, who account for 12% of the public school enrollment. When the school order came, Diggs said schools had to quickly come up with a plan to help all students, especially vulnerable students with special needs. This included making sure students were able to get online to learn virtually, he said. The biggest challenge was to make sure kids were okay, Diggs said. There were times when you had to run down parents and kids. The evaluations that are part of the process for serving special education students and identifying new ones were delayed. For instance, the Wake County school system stopped evaluating special education students last year between March and June. Complicating the situation, according to Gahagan, is that North Carolina school districts can change IEP plans without parental consent. The switch to all virtual instruction exacerbated what was already a difficult kindergarten year for Farrar. She said the spring was a nightmare for her as she sought outside resources to try to replace what Jaden had been getting at school. He needs that one-on-one instruction versus the virtual instruction because there's been a lot of times As a matter of fact, 95% of the time, he closes the computer because he can't understand and learn that way, Farrar said. The final straw for Farrar came over the summer during an online speech therapy session provided by the district. Even though Jaden had walked away from the computer, Farrar said the speech therapist talked for 8 more minutes telling him what a good job he was doing. Where is that obligation to take the steps to ensure that a child can access that virtual instruction that is provided? Gahagan said. From our perspective, it's not enough to say that the teacher was there virtually. Last July, a national class action federal lawsuit was filed on behalf of special education students to try to force schools to provide in-person instruction. The lawsuit was dismissed. Many special education students are getting limited or no in-person instruction. The post-holiday COVID-19 spike caused several districts, including Wake County and Charlotte-Mecklenburg, to suspend in-person classes through at least mid-February. State Republican lawmakers have announced they plan to file legislation that would require school districts to offer in-person instruction, the News and Observer reported. As a part of the return to in-person instruction, students have been required to wear face coverings, but there are exceptions, such as students who can't wear them due to health or behavioral condition. Gahagan said some schools are refusing to grant the mask exceptions to students with disabilities. It's a really bleak situation for some of these families, Gahagan said. When you're supposed to have a mask exemption and it's denied and public school is your only option, what is your option at this time? Chatham County has been offering students 2 days a week of in-person instruction since October. The days Jaden attends first grade classes at Chatham Grove Elementary School have been a godsend for Farrar. He is willing and ready to learn, Farrar said. He's very motivated to learn. I can see him just sprouting. But it still leaves Jaden with 3 days a week of online classes. Diggs said Chatham County is in a better position now than it was last spring to provide virtual services to special education students. One of the biggest changes, Diggs said, is Chatham became the first district in the state to use Presence Learning, an online program designed to serve special education students. He said the program has allowed teachers to interact with their students online and to assess their development. While nothing can replace having an in-person teacher, Diggs said the pandemic has shown that technology can be used creatively to help students learn. Some services need to be done in person, but there are a lot of services that have been done in a virtual way and will continue to be done in a virtual way, Diggs said. Farrar isn't a fan of Presence Learning or the other online services that have been offered to her son. At the end of the day, he's still behind a computer screen, Farrar said. It's not helping him. Farrar works from home, but she says it's hard doing her job as a health program coordinator when she also has to help Jaden. It's very difficult, and many times I fall behind, Farrar said. I just do the best I can. Sometimes my work has to fall short because my children are my first priority. Nearly a year into the pandemic, Gahagan said employers aren't as willing to give workers the time to help their kids in virtual learning. She says the solution is to bring students, especially students with special needs, back to daily in-person instruction. The long-term educational impact of the pandemic on students with disabilities is not yet known. Diggs said some special education students will show growth over the past year with the help of the technology that's supplementing what teachers are providing. Certainly, remote learning is not a way to provide all support for a particular child, but I do think there's a lot more technology being used previous to COVID and since COVID that's supportive of learning, Diggs said. But Gahagan, who is working with the families of special education students across the state, says some students may not fully recover from the time lost this past year. She said school districts can start by providing compensatory services for the learning lost when IEPs were not being met. Our most vulnerable and marginalized communities have been most hard hit by these school closures, and these students already had struggles before the pandemic and have the least amount of resiliency to come back, Gahagan said. What Farrar and many special education parents say they want is a return to daily in-person instruction. She's worried, though, that it may not happen even next school year. They may be doing all they can, but if they're doing all that they can, then special needs kids should be allowed to go to school every day that they're open, Farrar said. The next article is written by Gabrielle Calci, and it is entitled How a Dancer on the Spectrum Landed a Spot in the Super Bowl Halftime Show, Dateline Tampa, Florida. When people see Joshua Felder bust a move, they usually assume that he's taken dance classes. Despite never being formally trained, the 23-year-old Tampa native can freestyle just like his heroes, Michael Jackson, Usher, and Chris Brown. Over 96 million people watched him dance in a red suit and mask of bandages alongside The Weeknd during the Super Bowl halftime show. Felder was one of about 200 dancers who took the field alongside the Grammy Award-winning singer. It wasn't just an honor of a lifetime to dance for viewers around the world. The real truth is, I was born with a photographic memory, along with high-functioning autism, he said. With my photographic memory, I can remember the steps from watching the dance videos off of YouTube. I want to prove to everyone that you don't have to let your disability define you if you want to do something great in life. For 13 years, Felder has been a participant in Best Buddies of Tampa Bay, a nonprofit that aims to spread inclusion and independence for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. Felder is now a global ambassador for Best Buddies, traveling around the country to spread the group's message, advocate for others, and meet the occasional celebrity, including Tom Brady, back in 2019. It was a Best Buddies networking event in December that brought him to the Super Bowl. Morgan Hartsfield, Deputy Director of Development of Best Buddies of Tampa Bay, introduced Felder to a radio station manager who set up a virtual audition. We make it a goal to try to have our participants talk to people at these networking events and really self-advocate for themselves in a way, Hartsfield said, and Josh really did an incredible job with facilitating this conversation with this gentleman. Felder sent in a video of himself freestyle dancing. Within a few weeks, he heard back. He was going to the Super Bowl. Preparations took place in secret for the 2 weeks leading up to the game. Dancers took mandatory coronavirus tests and attended six-hour practice sessions at Steinbrenner Field and Raymond James Stadium. The performers were unpaid, but Felder said it was worth it for the once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, especially when he learned that he would get to keep his outfit. Lots of people are thinking to wear it for Halloween, he said. I would wear it sometimes for special occasions. Due to pandemic precautions, dancers weren't allowed to get too close to The Weeknd during practices or take photos with him. Felder remembers seeing the singer surrounded by four or five bodyguards. He also said every practice session felt like going to a free concert. Felder could barely sleep the night before the Super Bowl. He and the other dancers met at the Yangling Center, where dozens of masked men got dressed in a cramped bathroom. Then it was time to load onto a school bus and head to the stadium. Flashing police cars escorted the performers. I felt like a celebrity right there, Felder said. Then he was lining up on the field, mentally preparing to dash into the tunnel of lights next to The Weeknd. The moves took over. I felt like I was in the movie Step Up, he said. In my head, I was saying, let's make history tonight. Even though Felder's face was covered in white bandages, his mom, Mary, who had driven him to the practice every day, recognized him by his eyes. She started to cry. Then she got up and danced, too. He executed those moves like he was a Chris Brown backup dancer, she said. He knew exactly what he was doing. He hit every move. I'm thinking, this dude is on his way, and I'm so proud of you. It's a different world out there, she continued. It's very competitive, but Joshua has shown me, look, I can compete with the best of them and still come out on top regardless of my disability. His abilities have taken him to the places that no one would ever expect them to go, except he expects to go there. He says nothing could hold me back. Felder and other dancers weren't allowed to share their role in the Super Bowl with others until after the third quarter. As soon as he posted photos on social media, his phone blew up with notifications. He gained over 1,000 new followers on Instagram. Hartsfield was sitting on the couch watching the game when she saw his Instagram post. We were all screaming. We were so excited for him, she said. I've never seen such an outpour of encouragement from all of his friends and the Best Buddies participants. And honestly, he's probably the most deserving human being I've ever met in my entire life. Felder said his life has already changed since posting the photos. He's excited to use this moment to encourage others. I just want to be an example to everyone with a disability that you don't have to feel isolated. Believe in yourself. Just go for it. And of course, he's still basking in the joy of performing. I feel like Blinding Lights is going to be stuck in my head forever. The next article is written by Michelle Dement, and it's entitled, Senators Call on Biden to Uphold Promise to Expand Community-Based Services. Dozens of U.S. senators are urging President Joe Biden to make good on his campaign proposal to invest $450 billion in Medicaid home and community-based services. In a letter to Biden and Vice President Harris this month, 31 Democratic senators said that the administration should proceed with a plan to expand offerings for people with disabilities. Last summer, Biden unveiled a broad proposal to address the nation's caregiving crisis, which included a commitment to spend $450 billion over 10 years to allow people to choose to receive care in community-based settings. Biden said he wanted to give states enough money to cover the full cost of providing home and community-based services to each person with a disability who's currently on a waiting list. My plan makes a bold investment so states can clear the waiting list, Biden said at the time. Now, Senators Bob Casey, Democrat of Pennsylvania, and Cory Booker, Democrat of New Jersey, are leading a group of lawmakers who want to see the commitment come to fruition. They argue that investing in home and community-based services would help drive economic growth, create good jobs in the caregiving field, and meet the needs of aging Americans and people with disabilities. Your vision includes a long overdue investment in the caregiving economy to build a durable and robust workforce, to advance racial and gender equity, and to make it possible for older adults and people with disabilities to receive long-term services and supports in their homes and communities. We strongly support this investment and stand ready to help your administration make it a reality, the senators wrote in their letter. At the outset of your administration, we have the opportunity to rescue a teetering caregiving system and recreate it to transform the lives of millions of workers and to serve as an economic workhorse, the letter states. White House officials did not respond to a request for comment about the current status of the home and community-based services proposal. The next article is written by Don Stakem, and it's called Inclusive Apartment Complex Offers Opportunity for Independence. Stateline out of Hartford, Connecticut. For nearly 20 young people with developmental disabilities, the new Bear Woods Apartments in Canton offer their first chance to live outside their families' homes. I feel really good to be here. It makes me feel like a grown-up, said Nick Sinicori, 26, who until now has had to live with his parents at their house in Simsbury. From the outside, Bear Woods looks much like any other newly built apartment complex, but officials of Favar believe it's a model that could transform housing for those with developmental disabilities. They're opening a similar complex in Bloomfield this summer for middle-aged and older tenants and are hearing from other organizations serving those with developmental disabilities who are inquiring about the logistics, financing, and day-to-day operations. To our knowledge, no other apartment building has combined the key features we have, said Stephen Morris, executive director of the ARC of the Farmington Valley, also known as Favar. The nonprofit agency lined up state and federal funding, private donations, and tax incentives that made it possible to reserve 10 apartments at Bear Woods exclusively for its clients. Reagan Development Corporation constructed the three-story building and manages the 30 other apartments there. The Favar units have special accessibility features, affordable rents, and a specialty meal program and digital technology that enables staff to help adjust temperatures and lighting without entering the apartments. Favar will staff a lobby office around the clock and will provide van transportation to the tenants' supported jobs. Sinicori, for instance, works at Beans and Company Coffee Shop in Avon, where he serves food, cleans, runs a cash register, and handles other tasks. Each of the two-bedroom units will have two tenants, and almost all of whom are relocating from family homes, or in a few cases, group homes. One three-bedroom unit will have three tenants. For most, this will be their first apartment, the first time moving out of the family home. It's very exciting, and something of this scale has never happened before, Morris said. The new tenants include a kitchen worker at the Hospital for Special Care in New Britain, warehouse workers at U.S. Electrical Services in Middletown, and assemblers at Plymouth Spring in Bristol and LeGrand in West Hartford. The new complex on Commerce Drive, which is opening this month, provides an inclusive environment, Favar said. A nearby Favar facility will cook meals in advance. Tenants can order what they want each week, and the food will be kept in the refrigerated storage in the building. We've learned over the years that it's difficult to get people to eat healthy if they're not cooking, so we build a commercial kitchen preparing healthy meals. There is an inverse relationship with the health of food and the more independent living someone has. We didn't want to put out all of this energy and enthusiasm in independent housing only to see people's health decline. The apartments have 42-inch wide doors, and floors throughout the building are hardwood, all designed to make getting around easier for people with wheelchairs or with walkers. And even though this first wave of tenants is young, Bear Woods is designed for the long term. The agency is getting ready to open a very similar complex on Cottage Grove Road in Bloomfield. Morris expects it will accommodate 19 clients. This goal is to provide an alternative to supported care in a family home or life in a standard group home. Well, that's all the time we have for today. This has been Kevin with Able Living. I hope you've enjoyed today's reading from the audio reading service at the Allen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, the Center Solutions Podcast. followed by the noon book hour at 12.
This is a Recording Library of West Texas Community Update.
Sherwood Church of Christ, 4900 North Dixie Boulevard, offers free clothing on the first Saturday of every month. With so many families in the community are losing their jobs due to COVID and the downturn in oil, the Sherwood Clothes Closet is an opportunity for people to find needed clothing items for the entire family. Hours are 9 a.m. to 10:30 a.m.
Now airing on the Noon Book Hour, Extraordinary Ordinary People, a memoir of family written and narrated by Condoleezza Rice. Condoleezza Rice has excelled as a diplomat, political scientist, and concert pianist. Her achievements run the gamut from helping to oversee the collapse of communism in Europe and the decline of the Soviet Union, to working to protect the country in the aftermath of 9/11, to becoming only the second woman and the first black woman ever to serve as Secretary of State. In the 50s, Birmingham's black middle class largely succeeded in insulating their children from the most corrosive effects of racism. Condoleezza's father, John, a minister and educator, instilled in her a love of sports and politics. Her mother, a teacher, developed Condoleezza's passion for piano and exposed her to the fine arts. From both, Rice learned the value of faith in the face of hardship and the importance of giving back to the community. Extraordinary Ordinary People, a memoir of family, written and narrated by Condoleezza Rice. Weekdays at noon and 2 a.m. on Recording Library of West Texas Radio.
That's 10.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 46 and clear. Tonight, clear with a low in the mid-40s. Then, tomorrow, clear with a high in the low 70s. Tomorrow night, clear with a low in the mid-50s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 11 a.m.